Hello, and welcome to the General Knowledge Force. It's your main man, Kevin. Today, we're going to go into the education system. Yeah, the system that's been going through so much havoc due to this pandemic we're going through. We're going to go into the past, you know, what happened when all this first went down, what's going on currently, and what are some of the goals for the future. And of course, to help us through all this, we have our special guest, Denise Miotti, to walk us through it all. Denise, can you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Thanks, Kevin. I'm really excited to be here with you guys. The education field has been my entire life. I spent my whole life in school, literally, either getting degrees or finishing school. I started as an education major. Then I went back to school and got my reading specialist, and then I became a principal later. So elementary school, taught that several years. I taught middle school. Then I became a curriculum coach, where I would go from between four different middle schools. Then I became an assistant principal at an elementary school, and I later became the principal there. Then I moved back to middle school as an assistant principal, and the last 2 years I've taught sixth grade science, and I retired in June. So it's been a long haul.
Wow, Denise, that's amazing. Well, guys, let's go ahead and get started and get pumped for this journey to unfold. Hello, 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 everybody. It's your main dude, your main pal, your main guy, Kevin, with my best friend, Shane. Shane, say hello to everybody.
Hi, everybody.
All right, all right. Oh, and don't let me forget, we also have our special guest, Denise. Denise, how you doing?
Doing pretty well. I'm excited to be here.
Hey, absolutely. Hey, we are pumped for you to be here. This is, I'm just so excited for this. We were talking about this before the podcast even started, and I'm just thrilled for all these topics. So I kind of want to start off at the very beginning of all of this. Obviously, we're in the middle of a pandemic. There's a virus going around. People are getting sick left and right, which is unfortunate. But what was kind of like the education system's initial reaction to all of this?
Well, I'll be honest. We were all wondering what was going to happen with all the companies shutting down. And, you know, it was pretty quickly decided, literally, like I was there on a Friday. And they decided we're not coming back.
Yeah.
That we were going to start a different way of teaching.
So it's just like a flash decision in response to the outbreak.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's like, oh yeah, figure out how to be creative and think of new ways to pull this off. Even though we've been following the same system for so many years.
Right.
Now we're changing it completely.
Right.
And it's like, wait, what? 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 Oh gosh. So that Friday happened. And what was that creative process? Was like, were there like a bunch of teachers in one room that kind of thought it through, or was it?
You know, it was a decision. Obviously, our governor had decision-making deals there.
Right.
The authority.
The government's the one who ultimately made the decision and just sent the mandate down, and you all had to follow orders.
Yes. Our superintendent, I think, was trying to be as creative as possible on what do we do next? How do we keep kids engaged in still learning and learning the curriculum?
Yeah, because that's the thing. Like, how can we all be separated and still teach? Because, like, right now, there's already so much struggle when it comes to being together in one classroom. Like, I know when I was at school, like, I always had a teacher always picking on some student that was slacking off.
Oh, I was that person.
Or, like, a student that was, you know, intentionally causing problems and for whatever reason. And I bet now it's just, like, ridiculous.
It is very different. You'd be surprised. And actually, those students were always my favorite.
Really? That. Really? Why?
I don't know. Because I felt like they needed me more. And I mean, in a good way. Like, so they want attention for some reason, and they're getting it negatively or however they can. So for me, that was always kind of like my ticket to give them special attention in a positive way. So that they would love my class and always want to come to my class. So,
I feel like that's a rare quality in a lot of teachers. So, like, that's good that you have that, because not all teachers feel that way. They're just working another job.
I hate to agree with you, but yes, that's true in many cases, too many cases.
Right.
Wow.
Because, you know, my philosophy is kids will do whatever you want them to do if you build that relationship and they know that you love them.
Oh.
Good, bad, ugly, whatever. And I mean that, you know, generally speaking. If they know you love them, they will want to work for you and they will want you to listen to their stories. And it'll be great for you if you build that relationship.
Wow. It's kind of like they build that, like, in a sense, kind of like a motherly relationship with them. Like, oh, this person loves me, like, the way either the same way my mother loves me or the way I wish my mother loved me.
Oh, absolutely. And some of their mothers don't love them like they should.
Yeah.
So I think if you can fill that void for them, they're going to perform one way or the other. They're going to get your attention one way or the other. Yeah. So my kids like that, I don't know, I would just take special interest in them because they need you more, really.
Yeah.
So finding stuff for them to do, letting them actually be the kid that goes to the office for you, that never happens. But in my class, that does happen.
Oh, so yeah. if you're the student, let's say that picks on other students.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that situation? Like, do you try to give them that special attention by, like, making them feel good about themselves? Or, like, how do you interact with that?
Absolutely, that's what you do. Don't get me wrong. I've taken plenty of kids out in the hallway and chewed their ass.
Okay.
But, and I'm not saying they don't need that. But I feel like the more attention you give them that's positive, they know they're going to get attention from you. And, you know, I think you have to also think about strategically placing them in your classroom next to people that can tolerate that or kids that don't care about that. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of ways that you do that. I think also you set up your classroom so kids are very involved, all kids. So then they know they have to participate.
Dude, and I bet that's the challenge. How do I make all these students participate? Because every student's going to want to try, well, maybe not every student.
You're right.
There are plenty of students that will want to just not care or just to check out for that one day.
Right. And there's a lot of students that want to be invisible. Don't look at me. Don't talk to me. I'll do my work.
Yeah. I know. I personally was one of those kids when I was in school. Like, I was always like, oh, where's the corner? Corner's right over there. That's where I'm going.
Yeah. I think you just set up a system where everybody participates no matter what. And that's really not that hard to do if you start your classroom out that way. Like, if you have strategies, like, okay, for instance, I had science tables. So it was very easy for me to be like, 1, 2, 3, 4, each table. So they have a table number, they have a number where they're sitting. So when I would start my class, you know, we would always do a prompt to get them started and warmed up. And then I would basically say, okay, if you're a 1, stand up. And they would. So they knew I was going to get to them sooner or later. Oh. And then I also set up little things where they could get out of that. Like, you can pass one time. Ooh. You can actually pick someone else. I called it, you can designate a buddy. So they were participating no matter what. I would also have a quick group time, table talk, basically. So if they didn't know the answer, they could get an idea for the answer. So they had something to say.
Wow. That's really creative. That's awesome. Wonderful.
So, like, the synopsis of all this is that teaching is a much more personable, hands-on job than more than just, like, plugging and chugging a curriculum and shoving that down a bunch of kids' throats. So, like, is that, like, the main issue with the synchronized learning going on nowadays?
Yeah,
like, you're
not
getting the personal interactions between the teacher and child, so they're struggling harder and also struggling with the technology that they're using to learn.
Absolutely. I mean, kudos to the teachers. They're trying very hard. Because I actually got to be involved with that with a couple of my friends' kids. And the teachers are trying so very hard. But again, there's that distance. You're in front of a screen, you know, and those kids that want to check out, well, they kind of can check out. The teachers that I was engaged with, they would try very hard to call on students. But when you're calling on students, every student, you have like 25 other little students that aren't getting called on, they're waiting.
Yeah.
So it becomes difficult to keep them engaged.
Yeah, absolutely. Because they're not there. And like I know the people I personally know that are involved in the education system, like, you have to always, apparently, like, it's always a parent and a student. And a lot of times those parents don't really care.
Exactly.
And it's like, oh, whoa, what? Like, well, if the parents don't care, students probably aren't going to care either. So then, like, there's that imperfection, that problem in the formula when it comes to getting a student involved now that they're no longer like in your physical area.
Right. And that was part of the problem. So when we ended school, we started something called NTI, which is non-traditional instruction. And obviously we had never done this. So there was no real finesse to it.
It's like, here's an idea. Let's throw it at the wall. Maybe it works. Maybe it doesn't.
So, you know, a lot of the teachers aren't familiar with really using Google Classroom. Mm. So that was a difficulty. There were just a lot of learning curves there for the students and the teachers.
Oh, yeah. So, like, what was this whole formula? What was, like, the goal of it?
Okay, so basically we wanted to keep kids learning curriculum. But at this point, we felt like we couldn't really teach new curriculum because of the situation. So early on, we met as a team and we would decide what we would teach. We tried to review quite a bit at the time. So basically, we're looking back for things that are easy to post on Google Classroom that the kids can get to. On Google Classroom, though, you have to be really specific with what you say the answer is. And that's hard sometimes with science because it's usually so hands-on and there's a big discussion involved. So, again, that was a learning barrier.
Oh, my gosh. And, like, why Google Classroom? I've noticed that a lot of people have been using that. I'm sure there's, like, other forms of software that do that, too. Is that just the most popular option and that's why people are going down that route?
And well, in my county, I think so. It was available. You know, we have a lot of Chromebooks that we could lend out. It's pretty easy to get onto if you have any device. So we felt like that was a good way to go. But again, learning curves. Like, I had never used Google Classroom. Luckily, my kids were familiar with it because a few of our teachers... younger teachers, they basically had set it up for certain things like Google Slideshow and things like that. So after I got that set up and talked to my colleagues, that helped me a lot. Believe me, I'm not techno savvy when it comes to that specific area.
Yeah.
So we had to just jump through hoops for a minute and get through that. And then kids, we couldn't, I mean, some of them never even logged in. So at that point, everyone didn't have access to a device to use. So then we started also handing out packets, paper things that they would pick up at school. We hand delivered some to, you know, families that didn't have an option to get to school, you know, just like we still did lunches for everybody if they could pick it up. So we really tried.
Really?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. We did breakfast and lunch, especially for kids that are on free and reduced lunch because that's a need for them.
Right.
So we still try to provide that.
Sometimes that's all the meals they get.
Oh, it is. It's their only two hot meals a day.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, like, who delivers all that? Is it, like, their parents come pick them up, or they're, like, designated people at the school that drops it off at their house?
So we had a process, and during the time frame of breakfast and lunch, we would just basically bag lunch, have it ready, so parents could just go through our parent pickup line and basically pick it up. Whomever. We're picking it up for whomever needed it, basically. And then we also had people at our school, like our Frisky family resource coordinator. She would go out to houses. We have a family resource officer that would go out to houses. At that point, my principal, anyone that could, would be delivering things to homes that needed it.
Wow.
Which is awesome. I worked at an absolutely amazing school.
What school do you work at?
I worked at Twin Hoffel Middle School during that time.
Oh, wow. Man, that blows my mind.
I know, right?
Man, so the educational system's taking a major hit from the virus. Like, huge. Like, that's insane. Like, what? Oh, my goodness.
Absolutely, because you forget how many kids depend on schools for meals, education, help with school things. I mean, we offer so many things, which I'm proud to say. I feel like our county does a really good job in offering resources for families as well.
Well, do you feel like there's any, like, solutions to any of these problems that you might think about?
I think we really did the best solution we could by just keep churning it out and trying to get kids and families what they need.
So, like, how do you feel about, like, the Catholic schools and whatnot just immediately reopening and doing all that?
So, that's interesting to me. Basically, in our county and all the Northern Kentucky counties, basically, they sent out surveys to parents when school was ready to reopen. And parents could either choose to send their kids, are they comfortable sending their kids, rather. They could choose synchronized learning, which is different from what we did in the spring. This is very much more hands-on, face-on, at least you see your teacher. Or they could decide to do an online learning program, basically, that our county accepts, but our teachers aren't necessarily teaching. Very different than in the spring. I think in the spring we were kind of like, shock value, what do we do right now to make sure kids are still learning?
Right.
Yeah. And what was that impulse reaction to get them involved?
I think from the spring, we, like I said before, I think we had a lot of kids who didn't have access to certain tools they needed. We had kids that never even turned it on. They were like, well, I need paper products. But then the idea of turning them in, they had to sit for several days before our teachers could well, office staff, which are amazing, could actually scan them and email them to the teachers. Because you got to think, you have the virus. You can't just be handling everybody's papers from their homes. And so that was very, very difficult.
Wow.
So, yes.
Well, there's just hoops and rings to jump through every step of the way.
There were so many in that regard.
Okay, I really like this, but I'm going to go ahead and cut us off real quick for a quick message. I know
from
ad message.
Us.
I know ad message from us. Hey, didn't see you there. So I've got one question for you. Do you hate ads? Oh, wow. Me too. Sounds like we already have a lot in common. Here on the General Knowledge Force, Shane and I are committed to a zero ad podcast platform. But in order to keep this up, though, we unfortunately do need your help. All that we humbly ask is that you like, follow, subscribe, and share to help us really get this podcast going. Now, if you want to go a step further and become a super duper awesome pants, consider becoming a patron on our brand new Patreon. Here, you can get access to our official Discord server, have live chats with Shane and I, and of course, vote on the next topic in our podcast. Guys, thank you so much for your time. Now let's get back to it.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so Denise, I know something that I'm really curious about is when school started. I know right now we're in October, which blows my mind as it is. Can't believe we're in October already. But what was that first day like? Was there like a lot of tension or a lot of confusion?
So I feel like kids were really excited to go back to school. The ones that were going and parents were really excited to have them go back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So they're not going daily in most of the counties, the public schools in our area. They're doing some kind of schedule where they're actually doing synchronized learning still, which is learning remotely. However, now the teacher is in front of the screen the entire time and kids can tune in and ask questions because your teacher is live, which is actually very different than it was in the spring when we first started this.
Okay. And I know like one thing I've heard a lot with schools is, you know, you can choose whether you want to be remote or in person. I don't know if that's been something that you've interacted with much yourself.
Actually, yes. I was lucky enough to be helping two little girls of a very good friend of mine. I'm actually great friends with their parents. I was able to kind of like be their instructor while they were doing the synchronized learning. So for 2 days a week, I would sit with them, their second grade and fifth grade, and I would get to make sure that they were online at the right time and that they were doing their work.
But with, you know, that separation, do you feel like there's like that disconnect between students? Like, I feel like personally, if I was in that situation, it'd be so much harder to have that social connection. Like, you know, in like public schools, you know, you're kind of friends with everybody. You know, you're thrown into this situation with hundreds or thousands of other students. But I would imagine right now, since some are coming in, some aren't, you feel really segregated.
I think that has been a problem because you have really social kids that want to be with their friends. That's a big draw for school for many kids.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I know. Like for me, like this is not the right reason. My main reason for going to school all the time was like, oh, I want to see my friends.
Right.
Like this is the, you know, cause this right now is the best social experience of my whole life. You know, once school is passed on, you're an adult. And you're focusing so much more on work rather than socializing with your friends.
Exactly. I think that's true for most kids, to be honest. Yeah. So when you're doing synchronized learning, again, the teachers are awesome. They're trying so hard. Truly, truly, I mean that. But the kids, they're either home alone or they're home with a grandma or grandpa or a caregiver or someone like me. A lot of churches open their doors to have kids be able to stay there for teachers. But again, it's not like an adult sitting right there with them, whereas a teacher's right in front of you. So I think some of the problems were I would see some second graders, some fifth graders, obviously because my two little girls are in that grade. And you'd see some kids alone in their bedroom. You'd see some kids at the kitchen table. You'd see kids on the floor, their dogs laying there with them. So I feel like that was really hard for some kids to focus on learning.
Yeah, there's just so many distractions constantly going on.
You wouldn't think so, but yes.
Yeah, I know my mother's involved in the education system, and she would do these little like Zoom meetings or Google Chat meetings with people, and like
you'd be with the student, and then, like, you'd see, like, the father walk by half naked in the background, and it's like, whoa, I thought we were, I thought this was class. Right. And so you see these things that just completely just blow you away. Like, oh, so this is like the inside scoop of what really goes on in this household. Okay.
Actually it is. And there were actually, there's been some times, so I've heard, that, you know, someone would have to be called immediately from the office or the teacher or whomever and be like, hey, hello, you're on camera here. All these other kids just saw you walk by in your skivvies. No, or
you are now revealing this to the world.
Like, oh my goodness. Like, mm-hmm. You have to be more mindful of that. You can't just, like, it's like changing people's home lives for the parents.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you can't be like, get your shit out of this room.
Right.
Because
right.
It's live.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
And it just shows that, like, some parents will just, you know, zone out whatever their kids are doing.
Absolutely. And I feel like that was the problem, basically. Because your kids that want to learn, that are super intrinsically motivated anyway, they're going to be fine. They're going to do their work. They're going to ask questions. They're going to do whatever. Some kids ask a million questions. That's a way to get attention. And then they're on the screen and other kids are watching that, which that's a whole nother thing about distraction. But as we know, it just isn't the same as being in a classroom with your teacher. So the one thing I noticed is you have to remember that these elementary school kids don't have any typing skills. So the first week we went back to school, you know, I got a second grader and a fifth grader, and basically they don't know how to type. So assignments that people would assign, their teachers would assign, at first took so much time. And also they're looking at a screen pretty much all day.
Yeah.
So by the second week, I think a lot of parents had called in and said, they can't do this. So teachers tried very much to build in more breaks and to have shorter assignments where they could see just as much as what does the kid know, which that's always what we think in teacher. You don't need to do 50 problems to see if you know how to do a specific skill, like 20 is good.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Wow. And since students are really staring at the screen all day, it makes me like worry about like their eyes. You know, like nowadays you'll hear a lot about Blu-ray filter glasses. Because we just have, since like in the modern day, we have these screens which are so high def, it produces so much blue light that it causes actual pain and issues with the human eye and can erode your eye over time.
It burns out melatonin.
Yeah, right?
It messes up your sleep cycle.
Exactly. Like, you can be, that's the thing, if it's night and you're looking at your phone in bed, your brain's like, cool, it's daytime.
Yep.
So it's just like, I bet these students looking at the screen all day long without any kind of filter going on really hurts them.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because the two little girls that I had, they did have those glasses. Their parents had ordered those.
Oh,
now,
good parents right there.
Yes.
Good parents right there.
Whether I could get them to wear them or not was a different story.
Oh.
But they're great. But I mean, I think that's some of the problems that we're going to foresee, because now, even though they've went back to school, you got to think they're still doing synchronized learning every other day. So that's my point. You ask about the first day of school. I think kids were so excited to go back. I think teachers were still thinking, how am I going to make this work? Because they still have to be in front of their screen teaching for all the synchronized learners that's not their day, that's what they chose to do. So there are still a lot of issues.
Yeah.
So they're on like an A-B schedule?
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain what that is?
Okay, so some school districts are doing this A-B schedule where kids go to school Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Then the following week they go Tuesday, Thursday, and then they switch, and then they do Monday, Wednesday, Friday if you're team B, and then Tuesday, Thursday for team A. So they're trying to commit to social distancing because they still have to be 6 feet apart. They still have to wear their mask.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still a very, very different learning environment than I think they expected going back to school.
Wow, that's incredible. So I know a topic we kind of touched on a little bit earlier was Catholic schools.
Mm-hmm.
So I know, Shane, you were talking about it. Catholic schools, they kind of just opened up immediately, like full.
Right. So like they didn't have to like follow all the guidelines that were pushed down through the government mandate. So are they just, is their like education system completely separate due to it being a private institution?
Yes, in a lot of ways.
Okay.
So, wow. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm familiar with a lot of people that are going to private school. And they did. They just, like, opened the doors. Of course, they're trying to observe, you know, social distancing. They're wearing masks. But they full throttle went back to school. So from the friends I know and the families I know that are doing that, they're, you know, they're super excited, obviously, that their kids are going back. But again, you know, they have their mask on. They're trying to follow that. Also, from what I understand, the Catholic schools around here, private schools in anywhere really, are filled up because so many people wanted their kids to go back to school full time.
So, like, a lot of, like, people that were going to public school went and made the switch.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so, like, what about, like, they're still charging full tuition and all that?
I'd have to check, but I mean, I'm assuming.
Right. So I was curious if they would like change it since the pandemic, or like, is there like, are they still doing social distancing in those schools, or are they just running class like normal?
Again, I know for a fact they're wearing their masks.
Okay.
And I know for a fact they're doing some like online learning. Obviously, they can't be doing like full on labs and things unless everything is sanitized all the time. So it is different, but yes, those kids are in school every day. About the tuition, I'm not really sure, but I mean, that's how they fund their school.
Right, right, right.
So I'm assuming yes.
But so like opening, it could have been like a good business avenue because they're getting so many people transferring to their schools, but they're also having the issue of having too many, like not having enough occupancy because they're full.
They are.
Oh, that's wild. I don't have much to say about that. I think you filled it in.
Yeah.
So, goodness.
Okay. So, I'll go ahead and move us on. So, another thing I really want to talk about is retirement. I know that was a huge thing, like, when our new governor was coming in, was that teacher pension was going away. And so, that's why people elected who came into office. What has been, like, the chain reaction of that?
Well, I'll be honest with you. All the teachers didn't elect him.
Okay.
I think that's something everyone thinks. And I think a lot did because of the scare. But I think it is really challenging. I think it's been challenging to our field because there is something about having a pension. I mean, how many businesses? I mean, it's arguable. Nobody has a pension anymore. Very few industries have a pension.
A pension is like an extremely important benefit to weigh whenever you're like looking at a field of careers. Because like, You could go to a job and it not have any benefits and it pays well, but go to a job that has the pension that pays a little bit less, but over time you're going to be making a lot more money and it's a much more valuable career field in that regard. So, like, have people switched careers, like, losing the pension? Like, what's going on with all that?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, first of all, a flood of people retired. If they could retire, they did. I think that's still happening. Yeah. I mean, I retired right at 27 years. And I have a great pension.
And was that so you could keep your pension, or was that like going away whenever they changed it? Or like, so was that choice to like make sure you got it, or?
Honestly, I feel like I've been in education so long and I've done so many things that it was time. Like,
right.
For me, nothing would have affected me anyway because I was already in tier one. So all my retirement plans would have stayed the same regardless.
Okay.
However, I feel like, you know, at my school, we lost some great teachers because I think they were in fear of that will still happen at some point.
Mm.
So I think the problem is they want to go over to like a 401k system,
okay,
which that would be fine for brand new employees. I think if you're going in knowing that, then that's fine. But I also feel like people that are in the middle of the road, like, who's going to fund their pension if we stop doing that?
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to say is we pay into retirement our whole career. So you expect it to be there. But if we have a whole new group at some point that doesn't pay in anymore, then how are those people that are like at the stopping point, where's their pension coming from? So I think that is very scary. You know, I also feel like that's why a lot of people go into education. You know, there's a lot of benefits for families. You know, you get most of the holidays and breaks off with your children, which I love. And I've always loved that about that. That's very important to me. When I was a principal, principals don't get that option. Just so everybody knows, principals work pretty much all the time. You know, we get off some breaks. But honestly, you're there pretty much all the time working on things, because when one school year ends and you stop that fiscal year, you jump right into getting ready for the next school year. So It's a different position when you're in that higher position.
Wow.
So you obviously make more money doing that. That's basically the only way to make more money in education is to get more education and move up.
Or like just have tenure.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow, that's crazy. And so like with that, I know state testing has of course been a huge thing. You know, you can look left and right. I know back when I was in school, it was always like, oh, what can we do to get our testing state testing scores even higher than last year? You know, like constantly. Mm-hmm. Is that still a thing right now, or how's that been with the pandemic?
Okay, before I speak to that, let me tell you, as an administrator, as a teacher, as a student, there is so much pressure put on, you know, the people above us to get better test scores. Truly. I mean, shit rolls downhill. It's rolling. It starts from the top up, from, you know, the government down. So I have mixed feelings about test scores because I think everyone wants to do well. However, in this pandemic, they pretty much just took away the test scores for the end of last year. We should have been doing state testing in May. Mm-hmm. And they've already declared that there'll be no test scores this year.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my
God. So what are the importance of test scores for people that don't know?
Well, I mean, your test scores in Kentucky, they have like a rating system in every state, I imagine. But they have a rating system of, are you a 5-star school, a 4-star school, a 3-star school? So, you know, obviously everyone wants to be 4 or 5, really, just because of your reputation, how that looks. And if you score low for more than a few years, I mean, there's going to be a team come in and decide who needs to go and what do you need to do to restructure. So for people at schools, that's very scary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Does that also like affect the funding of schools' test scores?
No.
Okay.
No, it doesn't. And that's a good thing.
I mean,
your funding is based on how many kids you have in your school.
Oh, okay, so it's just population-based?
It is population, okay. And they set a date, and however many kids you have at school on that date, that's how much funding you get. And by that funding, I mean, that's going to pay for your entire school year, all your employees. It's going to be your budget for everything you need that school year.
Okay, cool. All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and stop us here. It seems like we're about at our time limit for this episode. Denise, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute blast having you here. And I know Sheena and I, we're just so thrilled about this podcast, and we're so happy for you guys to be here and listening to us right now. But we hope that you guys enjoyed this one, and we'll talk to you guys next week with an exciting new episode.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming, Denise. You're wonderful.
All right, see you guys.